So, Fred Newman, you're going to come to town and you're going to give a 2-hour concert. And my wife's been asking, what's a sound effects guy going to do for 2 hours? And so I thought that in order to answer that, maybe you should tell us about the breadth of you as an artist.
Oh, well, it hasn't always been called being an artist, I can tell you that. Shakily grown up in the, you know, in the back of classrooms. Well, you know what, it didn't dawn on me too much later in my life when I was doing a little stand-up that it was the sounds that I really treasured from my youth. And this came from these old storytellers in Georgia. And most of these were black guys. They were sort of Irish and Scots guys and that sat around this country store and told stories. And they cranked cars and threw cats out windows and this kind of thing. And, you know, I mean, you know, so they would, you know, you know, they do all these kind of sounds as they told the stories, and I would say, "Stop! How did you do that? How did you do that sound?" And that's what I really do is I sort of come from that tradition of storytelling, Southern probably, certainly Northern Europeans and European, but it's the sounds. I just love the sounds, and I found that really underpins it's the basement of everything I do. I do a lot of music, and actually most of my experience has been in television. A lot of kids television, hosted shows for Nickelodeon, did a lot of sound design, did music for cartoon series and sound design for movies, did a lot of Steven Spielberg kind of creatures and things like that. And I have a very flexible voice from doing all the sounds as a kid. So as ridiculous as these sounds may appear on the outside, what they are is they make your voice very flexible. It's like aerobics for the voice. So,
hi, Vern. Nice to talk to you. This is Baby Elizabeth. I love you.
I do stuff like, oh, man, you know, I do that sort of thing. And the wonder of radio is that you can change from, you know, three-year-old to a little old lady like this in, you know, a wink of an eye. And you can't even see the wink of an eye in radio.
And so call yourself completely self-taught, or at least taught in terms of simply listening, observing, and trying?
Self-taught sounds, it sounds more glorious than it really was. But you said something key, and it really is listening. I was just a listener. I was a really nerdy kid, and I wouldn't say I had a lot of social skills as a kid. It wasn't until I got much older and really realized that I could tell a story because I'd been on record for the first 10, 13, 14 years of my life that I had all these stories and sounds inside me that I could tap into that, and that really made me much more social and got my I felt like I was an okay person. I could actually tell a story better than most. And you should a weird little departure for me now, it wasn't at the time, is that I went to Harvard Business School, and I ended up doing very well there, not because I was very smart, but I could take what minimal information I had and I could put it into a story. And more than anything, I think we as humans are storytellers, and that's the definition of humans. I think we're the storytellers. We can't not tell a story. And so when I get with an audience, like coming out to, I mean, Spokane is such a wonderful place. I had such a great time with the show. We were out there 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago.
Well, when you brought the Prairie Home show.
Prairie Home,
you were
yes.
Also on the Prairie Home tour last summer, as I remember.
Oh, that's right, yes. Every time I've been there, I've just loved the people, the audience, it's just a beautiful, beautiful town, city. I mean, it's just a great place, and I've always wanted to come back there and bring my own thing there, and so I'm very excited about doing that.
So this idea of your own thing, your own show, is this something you've done quite a bit, or that you're just exploring now as a whole one-man, you know, entertainment for an evening?
It's not new. I've been doing it since 1980, when I first came on Prairie Home Companion. As the only thing lower than a sound effects person is Oh, actually, then a sound effect person is a book author, and I went on as a book author on Garrison's show. It was very new to the airwaves, and right after that, a gentleman got in touch with me that had a lecture bureau and said, "Would you like to do lectures?" And I said, "Sure." I didn't know what I was doing, but I started doing lectures, and I found sort of a voice with the lectures, and I do something in between science and sound and storytelling that seems to really work. And what I love about it is that it works across ages. I can do virtually the same show at a university. Well, it's never the same, but when I look in their eyes, I know what I'm going to do because I can see where they are, and people vote with their laugh, and I can see where I need to explore. But I like to give a lot of information where they come out and they go, "Wow, I didn't know that." At the same time, they would have laughed a lot. And if I can do that, and I think most of the times I can, and that's the power of sound. Sound, the more I get out and perform, the more awed I am, not by me, but by the sound and what it does to an audience. It kind of floats in, it binds an audience together. In a anthropological sense, just like public radio, is that it's how we tribalize. If I want to know who you are, show me what you're listening to on your iPod. Show me where you are on the radio dial. That will tell me more than how you dress or what car you drive. That will tell me who you are.
And also you sing. Talk about your singing.
Oh, singing. It's funny. It's probably, in terms of talent, the greatest gift I've been given. But I haven't used it except mostly for comedy. But I do sing a lot, and I do a lot of vocal impressions, and I get to use that on Prairie Home a bit. I do some. I will sing. I'm going to bring a few instruments, homemade instruments there. I'm going to do a few little things with that. But I'm pushing the envelope between singing and voice and scat and jazz and jaw harps from Thailand and all sorts of things. I love to push all that kind of sound together.
Talk a little bit more about some of these instruments, whether they're your vocal sound effects instruments or jaw harps from Thailand or anything in between.
You know, I started creating little instruments I was interested in out of bobby pins and twangers and things as a kid. The old jazz guys would put up a baling wire on the side of a barn and put it on, they would play this like a bass line. And I did that with barbed wire and all sorts of things as a kid growing up on a little farm down in Georgia. But I've gone on to sort of sound design. There's a group called Palabolas that does, they do sort of avant-garde dance and they're amazing. They do things with shadows, and it's something gymnastic and balletic. And they asked me, for instance, to do – they wanted a swarm of locusts for a show they're doing about the American West. And so I started thinking about bull roarers. These are the Native American – they're sort of eyebrow-shaped things that you swing around and they buzz around your head. You swing it on a like a leather tether, and it's about 10 feet around, and it wow like a didgeridoo or something. But they weren't tunable, and they weren't continuous. They're very hard to keep going. I wanted something where I could do different frequencies, and I figured out with a broomstick cutting it right, almost looking like two tinker toy ends on a little dowel. And I put a rubber band around it and put a little wind vane on it so that the rubber bands would hit the air on their edge. I could tune them, and I could make them tune them like bagpipes and do singing with that. And that they loved that. That was really interesting for its dance group, and they had various ones tuned and so forth. Then I took that, and I've performed with it there in Spokane. I think we came through last summer. I did a piece, yes, and I'm calling that because a kid named it that, a whirling drone, but that's, I love that, what a drone does to an audience, because it, and this is, imagine two drones together, so they're pitched at a fifth, like bagpipes, and singing against that, it it makes everyone, it's almost like ear cleaning. It's like audio Q-tips that everyone hears the same frequency, and everyone's, and then I go on top of that, I do some sounds and bird sounds and other things with that. That, to me, to watch an audience, you know, see their eyes kind of widen as they listen to a sound they've never quite heard before, that's very organic, and you can feel the vibrations, you know, that, you know, I've always said that sound is touch at a distance, and you feel it emotionally in a way that I'll pull out my bag of tricks, and I'll try them out. You know, I'll inflict those on the audience and see how they respond.
It could be said by some that a radio sound man is the last of a dying breed. In what way do you defy that, and in what way would you like to think that you're the first of a new wave?
I would say that's one of the most interesting questions I've ever been asked. Let me say that. You're clearly a sound thinker. No pun intended, but maybe pun intended. You know, I really don't feel like I'm a radio guy in lots of ways. I feel, well, the joke I make is that I'm not really a radio sound effects person. I just play one on the radio. And I think that's true in that I don't come from the old school of birdseed on tin to make rain. Or I do use, you know, coconut shells for horse hooves, but I just soon do it with my mouth, and I do the two together. I use shoes, and I use some of the old sound effects of radio, but I'm much more improvisational because that's what these old, mostly black guys did. And so I come from a slightly different folk tradition that really does work on the radio. And then there are sometimes that Garrison will say, no, don't do that with a rusty hinge. Do it with your mouth. It's funnier. That we're looking, you're not looking for dead real sounds in radio. They're not funny. But when you do a metaphor with it where the water has a more of a ploppier sound, or you add these sort of metaphors with it, people feel it a different way. And I think that I love the storytelling of radio. I love that tradition of it. I didn't grow up with it. I grew up with, you know, pop radio. The radio had already gone into pop music by the time I came on. No radio dramas in my background other than me nostalgically going back and listening to them. But going into sound design and into internet sound, where in surround sound now, tracing that through computers, I use a lot of computers to visualize sounds and place sounds and lock them to picture, that I think that sound has homesteaded the internet and new kinds of storytelling, where the bandwidth was there for sound before it was for video. So music, in the way we're listening to music now, the way we're listening to radio, the way I can listen to you in my pocket on my bicycle, you know, you across the United States, I can listen there. That's pretty amazing. So I feel like that we're raising, you know, we're waving the flag for storytelling in new media, even before the video gets there. The sound is there. Audio books and all sorts of things are happening. I think with the portability, that it's a very exciting time to be in sound. And to understand the nimbleness, it takes very little resources. It just takes imagination to do radio. On our show, that goes out to about 4 million people a week, that's 13 people, everybody included, and all the staff, everyone. That's the show. That's pretty amazing.
And in what way are people sitting at your feet? Are you teaching this or simply inspiring by example?
Huh. Because that is exactly what I would say, is that I sat at the foot of storytellers, and I'm now, later in my life, back at the foot of one of the best storytellers that I know, Garrison Keillor. I think the acoustics of Garrison, the taste of a tomato on a summer day. I mean, the way he says it, whispers it, you can hear his nose hairs. He's as close as anyone can get to you. If someone talked to you in conversation, they'd be right in your face. He's in your face. He's right beside you. He's almost as close as the person you're laying next to in bed. He's that close to you. and he's telling a story that it's closer than at your foot, or I'm at his foot. And I think that when people hang on the sound or on the words, you're just showing this is what a person can do. This is what sound does. And there's not as much visual going on, although I have to flap my hands just to do the timing of I'm flapping right now on the phone. I've got to flap my, because I have to be the bird, you know, I have to feel that. That I do some visuals, but it's the sound. I think both the audience and myself, as much as the audience, I'm like, oh, this is so cool that this is the way stories have been told for 40,000 years. And to get back to that, and people see, you don't need all of them. You don't need 3D. You have 3D. You have virtual reality right there in just the sound of someone's voice. And I'm sure you, in radio, you know this, but it's just such a affirming thing, because this is 90% of our communication is between mouth and ear, and especially the communication that matters, and the catch in the voice. There's so much information in that.
And so,
am I going on too long?
No, you're going on exactly the right amount, because we're going to look forward to sitting at your feet on Wednesday the 18th as you bring your show to Spokane. Thanks a lot for spending time with me, Fred.
Oh, totally enjoyed it. Thank you. Can't wait.